Welcome to Make Your Wealth Work, the podcast where wealth becomes your greatest ally in achieving your dreams.
We are back once again to Make Your Wealth Work. Joe, I am stoked to be here. Last time we were talking about becoming your own banker, the heart of the infinite banking concept. And today I thought it would be fun to bring some real world examples, and you've got numbers for us. You've got stories for us. So I'm excited to jump into infinite banking in action today.
Absolutely. Yeah. I get excited about this. And the more I talk about it with clients, the more I get excited about the fact that, first of all, that I own my own family banking system, and that we could use it for not only for our own good, our own enjoyment, but that we have the ability to make gifts, make contributions, you know, support causes and things like that, that we support, that we care about. The first thing that has to exist is you have to have the capital. Capital has to reside somewhere. I mean, there's a quote from Nelson Nash: capital has to reside somewhere. What most Americans are doing, unfortunately, is they're relying on that credit facility. They're relying on their credit score. They're relying on their credit history to borrow somebody else's money, and they call that capital. Yeah, I got to get my hands on some capital because there's this great deal because a buddy of mine down the street got a tip. Oh my goodness. No. Right? And yeah, I better get a hold of some capital. So what you're saying is you need to borrow some money right off the bat. So you're not starting off with any money out of your pocket. Come on, even when you buy a house, most people are going to put 5%, 10%, 20% down. And there's multiple reasons for that. Number one, you don't want to have all of the money coming from the loan because that's going to increase the loan. It's going to increase the points. It's going to increase your monthly payment. And unless you have a mortgage like I have, which is 3%, wow, you probably have a mortgage that's more like 5, 6, 7, 8. And you don't want to put a lot of money on those mortgages. So again, it's borrow from somebody else or borrow against your own assets. And what we're saying is you build that capital up, you're going to start to enjoy it. You're going to start to get used to it. You know, they say that success is a habit and so is failure. So you start to create the habit of building up capital. When you get to 100,000, you're going to say, you know what? That really wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to take me years and years and years. And I got $100,000 in my account. It's totally under my control. It only took me X amount. It only took me 2.5 years, 3 years, whatever it is. Okay. So let's go with the car example.
All right. First one, funding a major purchase. So a car. Yeah, that's an excellent one.
So when I first got this learning under my belt with Nelson Nash, and he really started to take me through my paces. And I came home one day and I said, honey, you need a car. You need a new car, replace the old one. And guess what? You're an officer of our corporation. You're my business partner. This is a car that's going to be used in our business. So not only do we get to finance it through our family banking system, we also get to write off the interest. That's kind of a bonus. It's not that big a deal, right? Because the big deal is the purchase price. Now, this happened over 20 years ago. So this was 2003. And we were buying my wife a Lexus SUV. It was $42,000. And so I said, honey, we're going to go to the dealership. We're going to write them a check for $42,000. We're going to take the car off the lot and we're going to set up a payment plan. And I'm going to charge you, because you manage our finances, you're our CFO, I'm charging you 12%. And she said, are you crazy? but here's the deal. The insurance company is charging us 5% at the time. And we're going to pay them for the use of their money at 5%. But I'm charging you an extra 7%. And where is that money going to go? It's going to go directly into our policies and increase the cash value in our policies. So it sounds like I'm kind of fooling myself. I'm kidding myself. I'm tricking myself into putting more money in my policies. Absolutely. because I want to find every excuse to put more capital into my control and in the protected environment. I remember where I lived then in Nevada, where I live now, Pennsylvania, there are creditor protections on all the money that's inside my policy. So if I get into an accident and I'm sued for above my car limits, they're going to try to go after different assets that I might have. Savings, they can grab some in a bank. They can access a garnishment against my paycheck. They can't touch the money. It's in my policies. They can't touch any of it. It doesn't matter how much I have. There's unlimited protection. So I want to get more money into those policies for that reason alone. So we set up a 6-year payment schedule because in 2003, $42,000 was a lot of money for a car.
Now you can't get a Civic for that much.
There you go. So we set up a 6-year repayment schedule. Now the advantage that I had was I already had policies that I would call seasoned or mature policies. They were already cash flowing policies. That doesn't make any difference if you don't have one because you need to start one, right? You can't go backwards. Best time to plant a tree is 50 years ago. Second best time is today. So I used mature policies. So did I cheat? Absolutely. So I made a payment back to the insurance company. The equity was restored. The lien was removed little by little. And over a 6-year period of time, we paid the $42,000 back, removed the lien against my policies because the $42,000 was in the policies and all it did was grow during that 6-year period of time. During that 6 years, my $42,000 grew to more than $60,000. Now, that does not include the extra premium that I've been paying over that period of time because I pay ordinary premiums into the policy. I'm not counting those dollars. I'm only counting the growth as if I was paying no more premiums. So I got the money back. There's my $42,000. I got the growth on the policy. I got the extra payment that I was putting in, that extra 7%, which was over $10,000 over that six-year period of time. I also got to deduct the interest that I paid the insurance company. I did not deduct the 7 because that came back to me, but I deducted the 5%. The interest that the insurance company charges me was tax deductible in this case because it was characterized as either business expense, which it was, or investment related interest, which it was not. It was business related. So I got the tax deduction, which was several thousand of dollars. And then, which most people get, I got the salvage value of the vehicle, which was around $8,000. So when you add up all those numbers, I bought a $42,000 car. And at the end of 6 years, I had $70,000 in my account.
You did it wrong, Joe. You're supposed to have less money.
I know. And unfortunately, you know, the bankers and the lenders and the finance people didn't get all the money back in their account. The money wound up back in my account because I had borrowed against it in the first place. Yeah. And of course, I have a gigantic financial partner, which is an insurance company. Now, we've bought policies over the years with 4 different companies. They're all mutual companies. They're all 100-year-old companies. They're all stable. They don't lose the money ever. And they've paid a dividend every year for 100 years. So we kind of feel like they're going to be in business for a while. Right? They only exist for one reason, and that's to benefit us. So we've got these policies. We control them. We never have to say please, although we do say please because we have courtesy. So when I want a loan, I fill out a form. I sign it electronically. We send the form in, and I get the money direct deposited into my account within a couple of days. I mean, there's no strings, period. I'm going to get an interest notice a year from now. Well, Joe, here's $42,000. 5% of that is $2,100. You owe us $2,100 for the use of the money for the year. Now, what if I get money from some outside source and I have a windfall come in and say, you know what? I didn't even need the $42,000 for the whole year. I only needed it for 6 months. Well, you're only going to get an interest bill for 6 months. There's no prepayment penalties. You're only going to pay interest for each and every day you have the money out. and you don't have to pay interest if you pay the loan back early.
Incredible, man. So, all right, that was a car loan. Now let's talk about a business. This is part of a more advanced strategy that we'll be talking about in the next episode, but funding a business or investment using your IBC policy.
Sure. So let's use the example of a new agency, because we're an insurance agency, a financial agency. And I like to invest in other people who have mutually shared values with me. And I've gotten into other agencies, opening up brand new agencies in other areas, other geographic areas. And so I'll need some capital to open up the agency, to get things rolling, to pay for some infrastructure, maybe an admin person, so forth and so on. Any business that you ever start is going to have what Nelson calls crank up costs or startup costs. And so those costs need to be accounted for, but you need to find the money somewhere. And where most people would go automatically to some credit facility, I go to the Pantozzi Family Fund. We call it a fund. We don't call it a bank because state bank regulators are very itchy about having private individuals call their personal systems banks. So our system is called the Family Fund. So I took a loan. In that case, it was a $50,000 loan against the Family Fund. And we continued to build that agency over a number of years. And we built it to the point where it was very profitable. And part of my strategy was get them going, get them profitable, get the right people in place, and then allow myself to exit and look at it like any business that you might operate for a while, and then take your exit and make a profit. So I exited that business at a substantial profit. And over that period of time, I paid that $50,000 loan back to the insurance company, restored the unrestricted equity in my policies. The policy continued to grow the whole time. And now I turned, let's say, $50,000 into close to $500,000.
Okay, great.
Now people talk about rates of return, and I don't really get myself too upset or too distracted about rates of return, because rates are funny. You know, let's say that you had a 15% investment and I had a 1% investment. Well, who's making more money? We have no idea, because we didn't talk about how much capital you have earning 15% versus how much capital I had earning 1%. What if you had 100,000 and I had 1,000,000? Right. So most people get a little bit distracted, a little bit preoccupied, and I think confused about the issue of rates and rates of return. So if you look at the rate that I received back, if I invested $50,000 and I cashed in my share of the company for $500,000, I'll let you do the math.
Not too shabby.
Right. I call that 10x. Now, if you're analytical or if you're skeptical or cynical, you might say, well, wait a minute, let's do a calculation. How many years did you have the investment? Well, what were your expenses, et cetera? And of course, those things were accounted for, and I'm talking about net dollars. But it wasn't that important to me that I happened to make 10 times what I put into the business. What was important to me was not the rate of return, but the volume of return. And the volume of return that I got was 10 times what I put in. Again, it was $500,000. And the rate wasn't that important to me, because you can't buy a car with rate. You can't buy groceries with rate. You need dollars for that.
All right. So car purchase, mm-hmm. funding a business investment with a 10x gain.
Yep.
No big deal. What about one more example, something a little bit more common? How about an example in real estate?
Okay. This is probably not the most common example, but everybody has their their desires. Everybody has their wish list. I've met some people who have put pictures of things that they'd like to have, vacations they'd like to go on, a cruise that they'd like to take, and they have it, maybe it's taped to the refrigerator. So over the years, they make refrigerators so that you can't put magnets on them anymore. So you got to tape things, right? So my wife and I love going to the beach. We love being at the ocean. I love walking up and down the shore, picking up shells, looking at sea life, whether it's in the water or you go into those tide pools in Southern California and you see anemones and you see little fish, and you see crabs, you just see an endless amount of life. We love the ocean. And one day I came home to my wife after work and I said, you know, a client of ours just called me up a couple of weeks ago. He took a couple $100,000 loan against his policies. And, it's none of my business why he's taking a loan, but he shared with me that he was going to buy some, meaning several, beachfront lots. Now he had me at beach and, I had arranged the loan for him. The loan took just a few days. He got the money and he made his purchase. And I spoke with him about 2 weeks later and I said, would you mind telling me where those lots were? He said, sure. My real estate agent is John such and such. And he's a REMAX agent. You know, it's a worldwide company, I believe. And I bought some lots, beachfront lots, in Central America, in the country of Belize. And not only are they beachfront, but this beachfront is actually part of an island. It was on Ambergris Key. Now, I was all impressed. And then I hung up and I said, okay, I better go look at the map because I have no idea where Belize is. And found that it was in Central America. And all I really needed to know was that it had the bluest water I'd ever seen in my life. And now this island is 12 miles from the mainland. If you know anything about the curvature of the earth, you can't see beyond 7 miles. So from this island, all you see is ocean. You don't see the mainland. And so I went home, talked to Evie, and I said, honey, what have we always talked about as being a desire of our heart? And she said, beachfront. Beachfront.
No hesitation.
I said, well, we have the opportunity to go down to Belize because there are some lots available at a pretty reasonable rate as far as I'm concerned. And we have the capital. So there's key. I mean, we're not going into debt to do this. And my wife said, do it.
Wow.
And so I said, well, so are you going to get us the flights? Are you going to set up a week or two from now or next month or when do you want to do this? Let's go down and see the property. Now, this is where a little bit of my wild hair comes into play here and my wife's as well. And my wife said, fly down? No, you trust your client. Yes. You trust this REMAX guy. Yes. I've already been the phone, had an hour long visit with him. And it's a reputable company. I've seen the map. I've seen the drone video of the property that's available because he's selling lots. I mean, this is a whole area of the island. The island's only 2 miles wide and it's 24 miles long. And she said, we don't need an airplane trip.
That's the spot, huh?
I said, man, did I marry an awesome wife? And I'm a little bit embarrassed to admit to you that we bought the lots, plural. We bought two before we ever saw them.
Good for you. Boy, that's brave.
And we got on an airplane within about 6 to 8 weeks. We flew down to Belize. Our realtor had one of his team members meet us at the airport, took us to the boat dock. Borrowed a private boat and took us around the island. And we got off the boat and walked onto our property. We got to stand on the beach that we owned. And we're able to develop it. And the first thing that we built was a 100-foot long dock.
Oh, really?
With
nice.
A little lowered area where you could bring your boat up to. And one of the most beautiful things about Belize is that water, that 12 miles long distance from the island to the mainland, 12 miles of water, all 10 to 12 feet deep.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
And of course, from the air, you can see the hammerhead sharks, which are in abundance. And you fly in on this little puddle jumper. You're flying at 500 feet, so you can see the sea life. It's just a wonderful place. So we have to go back to the mechanics. How complicated is this? No, it's not complicated. It's a matter of having access and control of the capital.
Yeah, it's a matter of discipline as well.
It's discipline too. But you know, rinse and repeat, whether you invest in a car or invest in a business or invest in real estate, the mechanics of borrowing are the same. It's a question of, do I want to go into debt up to my neck? Well, if you control the debt, if you control the capital, what you're really doing is you're taking money from one pocket and putting it in the other. In the meantime, what do your policies do? All they do is continue to grow and grow and grow. And like Nelson Nash says, there's nothing you can do about it.
Man, I dig it. I dig it. So that is a wrap for today's episode. In the next episode, we are going to talk about another interesting topic around the idea of retirement and how infinite banking can play into that. So that is it. Thank you, Joe, for the stories and the encouragement. And thank you guys for tuning in. We will be back in your earbuds next time.
This is the podcastfactory.com.